All right, we're beginning here on the top of Yud Gimel and Aleph. We finished off with the Mishnah yesterday. In the Mishnah, we saw a person who was Mikabel Nizirut in certain circumstances when I have a son, if I have a child, and we saw that the Mishnah stipulated in each of those cases what would be the outcome. But as you rightly asked yesterday, Pshita, if he says, when I have a son, then it should only be when he has a son. What do you need to bat, androgynous, tumtum, no? The Mishnah is telling you information that would be self-evident, obvious, that you don't need a Mishnah to tell you. Hi, my the Memra. What's the Mishnah telling us that we wouldn't have known otherwise? Mishum Seifa, telling us the latter piece. Bat, tumtum, vandruginus, eno nazir. That, not that if he has a son that he is a nazir, but it's telling us rather that if he has a daughter, androgynous or tumtum, that he's not a nazir. Mar still says, pshita. If he said Ben, he meant a male child. What's the question here? Maudatema, that the word Ben also is the shorish or derives from the kushe evne hu dekamar. He doesn't mean Ben in the sense or particular sense of male child. We also note the word Ben or Banim is used more generically to refer to children in general. And all the Rishonim over here quote the Pasuk, which is ve'evne gam anochi mimena, that we see that is used in the Torah to describe the birth of children, not specifically a male child, and the word ibaneh is used in that context. So maybe that's what he means over here when he uses the word ben, is l'kashe'evne mimena, or ben in a more generic sense of child, and that's why we would have thought maybe it includes these other items. Kamash Valandulo, that's not what he means. He meant Ben, he meant male child in particular. That's the Chiddush of the Mishnah. V'mamar kasher li Vlad. So then he says, if I have a child, then it said over there that all of these are included. Again, Pshita, if he says I'm going to have a child, then what's the question? Malutem Vlad michsha b'nei inche b'inon. That I need a child that is significant amongst people, and therefore it's not sufficient that he has a child, but he has to have a child that others would consider to be significant or would not be in some way impaired or handicapped, and therefore he would not consider these to be, this androgynous or tumtum, to be considered a vlad, or according to the Mefarash and Tosfot over here, it includes a bat, which is that both Tosafot and the Mefarash over here say that the only thing that is considered to be chashuv would have been a ben, would have been a son. And therefore, you would have excluded a bat, a tumtum, and androgynous. Or, again, there are other rishonim that suggest that it would have included a ben and a bat, but it would have excluded androgynous and tumtum, who would not be considered to be your average vlad. And therefore, the person would not have been referencing that. Kamash Malan, when he says Vlad, it's all-encompassing. It doesn't matter what type of child is born. As long as there's a child born, that is included in his neder. That's the Chiddush of the Mishnah. Hipila Ishto, Eino Nazir. If his wife miscarries, then he's not a Nazir. Man Katanilo. Who is the author of the position here in our Mishnah? We know that Rabbi Shimon is the alternate position, which is Rabbi Shimon says that he is obligated, misafek, to bring a nazirut, and therefore he has to stipulate a tenai in order to ensure that he is chayab nazirut. So we know that Rabbi Shimon holds that safek nazirut tahachmir, and that's what causes his position to be the case here in our Mishnah, but the Tanakama obviously disagrees. What the Gemara here is asking is, who is the Tanakama of that position? The Gemara answers that it's Rabbi Yehuda de Krihu. So Rabbi Yehuda of the pile. You remember, we had a machloket earlier on with regards to a person who takes a neder nizirut that's connected to the size of a pile. And then they show up, v'nignav v'nevad, and it was stolen or it's not there. The question was, what is his status now? There you had a machloket as to whether he is a nazir or not a nazir, depending on your view about safek, or whether a person is machnisat smol safek. Over there, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion was that he was eino nazir, because ein adam machnis atzmo l'safek. A person doesn't put himself into a position of safek. What the Gemara is suggesting here is that Rabbi Yehuda is also the author of our Mishnah over here, because he's basically saying, safek nizirut lehakel. And it's a similar type of idea over here, that either you say Savik Nizirut Akel, or you say similar to the position over there, that a person is not Machnis Atzmo L'Safik. A person doesn't put himself in a position of Safik, or a person doesn't consider that possibility of Safik in his outcome. That's not what he was articulating when he was trying to establish Nizirut. He did not include the case of Safik. That's not something that would have been part of his mindset when he took the nether. So one of those three reasons, Rabbi Yehuda, who has an opinion there by decree, will also say has the similar opinion over here by our Mishnah, that in Pila Ishto, Eino Nazir. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Yomar, Imaya Ben Kayama, Areni Nazir Chuva, Vimlav Areni Nazir Nedava, Baimine Rabbi Abba Miravuna, Areni Nazir Likishieli Ben. Person says that I am a Nazir when my wife has a child, Vipila Ishto. And his wife miscarried. Again, we discussed yesterday what that means. According to many of the Rishonim over here, it's a case where the baby was born, but contextually, we understood that the baby was a viable baby, either because Kalulo Chadashav had reached full term, or we're going to see in a second now cases where there's possibly another baby born at the same time that was viable, or others still suggest that Hipila over here is not in the traditional sense of miscarriage, but rather, the baby is born, but passed away before the 30 days elapsed. And therefore, it's called Hipila Ishto, even though it was what we call Ben Kayama. I mean that, based on what we saw here, the child should have survived, should have made it past the 30 days, but he passed away before that period in time. So that's the question here. V'ifrish Korban, separates out a Korban, v'chazra v'yalda. And then she goes back and gives birth. Maho, what is the din? Now, what happened or what the scenario is, we'll discuss in 1 second, because it's not clear. But Aliba Deman, according to whom are you asking this question? Aliba de Rabbi Shimon, Maiti Ba'ile. If it's according to Rabbi Shimon Shita, what's the question? Hama Rabbi Shimon, Safek Nizirut, Lecha Achmir. And we have a Safek and a Nizirut, it goes Achmir, we go to the Chsad Chumra. And so therefore over here, even without the second child, you're already in a position of Safek. And therefore, just like you would have to bring a korban nizirut or hakipa nizirut bisafek, this korban that you were makdish is also kadosh misafek. Vela aliba de Rabbi Yehuda damar safek nizirut akel. The question must be according to what we just established now. The Rabbi Yehuda is the author of our Tanakhama, or the author of our Mishnah. So therefore, the question is according to his shita where he says safek nizirut akel. My, what do we think here? Kadosh, olo kadosh. Is it kadosh or is it not kadosh? My nafkamino. Why does it make a difference? In the end, the woman has another child, which clearly obligates him in a nizirut. So in the end, he is a nazir, and the animal will be used for a korban. Nafkamino, the gizato, ula avodbo. The question is, was he restricted from utilizing its shearings and working with it from the time of the first haktashah? Or is it only after the second child is born? Teku, we leave this as unresolved. Now the case, according to both the Rosh and the Tosafot, the case here is we are talking about twins. Twins that were conceived either simultaneously or very close together in time. Because obviously once the woman is pregnant, she's not becoming pregnant again. So the case must be a case where we're talking about twins. And the question that revolves around, which is very interesting here, whether we view these twins as being, in essence, identical twins. And since they are identical twins, therefore, if one of the twins survived, that gives us information about the other twin. So even though one of the twins was, whether it was stillborn, miscarried, whatever you said before in terms of Hipila Ishto, in that instance, the other child that's born is a viable entity shows us that the first child was also a viable entity, and for whatever reason, it didn't survive. Whether it was trauma at birth, whether there were other factors that caused that baby not to survive, but it should have been a viable entity. Based on that, since when the first one came out or was miscarried, he was mafrish the korban. Then when the second one is born, now he's clearly chayav in his zirut because the second one is a viable baby. Do we say because the second baby now shows us or gives us information about the first baby. Therefore, the animal that he was mafrish by the time of the first baby is kadosh, because it shows us now that what Rabbi Shimon says in the Mishnah has some validity to it, which is that generally Rabbi Yehuda says it's a safek, and such a big safek that we can't ever know whether that baby was a viable entity, and therefore you're not a nazir, because we go safek nazirut akel, and then we have to deal with it only after you have another baby. But over here, we have clear evidence, because they were twins, maybe that's enough evidence to say even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that that first baby generates enough of a nizirut, or a connection to nizirut, that the animal is kadosh from that moment. Or, was the case, the babies developed at a different pace, which is either the possibility that they were not identical twins, which is one possibility, the way that is described here, that the Rishonim, or the Tosafot over here, talks about a case where she became pregnant, and then she only conceived again after 2 or 3 days, meaning that the second child that's in there, the twin, was actually conceived at a later point. We don't have to go to that extreme, obviously, of Tosafot, but you can differentiate between identical twins, right, and twins, which come from that the fact that they were actually two conceptions. So therefore, you can't say that one of the children tells us information about the other child, because it wasn't that they started out as a single conception, then split, and therefore information about one is deemed to be information about the second, but rather there was a double conception at that time, and that's why she has twins, and therefore they're not identical twins. And since they're not identical twins, then maybe one doesn't give you information about the other. That's one way to say it. Or the way that the Rosh brings, Odilma zen nigmarat tzurato lezayin, verishon nigmarat tzurato letet, velo kalu chadashav. It's a case where one baby developed faster than the other, and he completed the gestation at the 7th month period, whereas the second child only completed gestation at the 9th month. So therefore, when they're born over here, one of them is a viable entity, one of them is not a viable entity, because one of them has been kalu lo chadashav, the other one has not, and therefore you can't automatically assume that the information about one is true about the other. So the way that the Balei HaTosafot and the Rosh speak over here, we're talking about twins, we're talking about births, where the Rosh even suggests here it's within a day of each other, they're very close in time, and that we're asking, does that give us information about the other baby? The Gemara leaves it as a teiku, because it's not clear, even when you have twins, or even when you have a birth very close together like that, whether the information about one child is automatically deemed to give us information about the second child, because there are possibilities that they are different, both in the gestation period that is needed for them, or because they're not identical twins, and there may be different factors involved with each of these children. And that's why the Gemara leaves it as a teiku, as far as the kadosh is concerned, that it is kadosh or not kadosh from the first baby. On the other hand, the Mifaresh over here says that, and it seems like the Rambam says something similar, that we're not talking about twins, but rather another birth. And that at the second birth, do we say that the original kedusha is chal? Because retroactively, what we see is the animal now is going to be utilized for a korban nazir, for the second child that is born. So then do we say retroactively the kedusha that you imposed upon it at the birth of the first child, even though at that time there was no necessity for a nazirut, and there was no kedusha associated with it, but now that we see you're going to utilize it later, did your original hakdasha work? Or is it only when the second child is born does the hakdasha take effect? And that the Gemara leaves as a teiku, as unresolved, because it doesn't know what the mindset is when a person is makdish there. He's makdish by the first child, where it's clearly not necessary, but when the second child is born, it will be used, and we'll see that it'll be used for a nizirut. Maybe that's sufficient grounds to say that the kedusha was chal at the time of the first birth. Now, again, the nafkamina will be in between that time and the time that it's the second child is born. What is the status of the animal? Is the animal chulin? Or is the animal kadosh? Meaning that it's a surbi gizav avodah, like all other kodeshim. So the Gemara leaves that as unresolved. Again, for Rabbi Shimon, it's not a question, because Rabbi Shimon thinks that you are chayav, but it's a safek nizirut, is lachmir. As Tosafot points out over here, you're not going to be chayav in the sense of vadai, Because even Rabbi Shimon agrees that when the Pilei Ishto is only a Safek, and be Safek, you have to then create a Tanai to ensure that you're really Chayav and Nizirut. So over here, if you're Magdish, the animal, after the first birth, it is Kadosh, Misafek, the same Safek that Rabbi Shimon says or obligates you in a Nizirut. So that's the question, the Gemara that was left unresolved. Okay. You know what I'm saying? The way that it's phrased in the Mishnah, it's a very difficult phrase in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says she miscarried, but maybe it was a Ben Kayama. So you have to explain Ben Kayama there different than your standard Ben Kayama, because obviously if she miscarried, it's not a Ben Kayama. So you have to either explain that it means that it could have been viable, and that's enough of a reason to make him a Nazir, or you have to say that situation where Pila here is used not in the traditional sense of miscarried, but in a sense that the baby died before the completion of the 30 days. And if you say that, then it's much easier to understand our Gemara as well. Because then if the twin survives beyond the 30 days, then it seems like that he could have. The baby came to full gestation, should have survived. The reason it passed away before 30 days is some exogenous variable that caused it to pass away. So again, if you explain Hipila Ishto in that manner, that it was really born, and that it didn't make it to the 30-day mark, and then you have an identical twin that does make it to the 30-day mark, then you'll say that it had the capacity to survive and be a Ben Kayama, and something else caused it to die. So really it was Kalulo Chadashav. It went to full gestation. It was a totally complete, viable baby, and then it died. Again, even if you say that Hipila Ishto means that she miscarried, then the way the Rishonim explain over here, Ben Kayama means that the miscarriage happened, but the baby itself had reached full gestation, would have been viable, and again, something caused it not to survive, whether it's a umbilical cord got wrapped around its neck, whatever the reason is, then, according to Rabbi Shimon, because of the Safek, he is a Nazir. We don't know for sure. We can never know for sure. So, according to Rabbi Shimon, he means Safek, he's a Nazir, and according to Rabbi Huda, means Safek, he is not a Nazir. The Gemara's question, then, is entertaining the possibility, but maybe if we have more information, that would change Rabbi Huda's mind. So in the other case, you just have one baby, and all you have in front of you is the information about this baby. You don't have sufficient evidence to know. When you have the second child, that gives us more evidence about the first child, then maybe in that case, it would be that you also have an obligation, or there's a certain amount of obligation that derives there that even Rabbi Huda will agree to. So again, especially if you say that Hipila means that after they were born, the baby passed away, then over there, the twin that survives is giving you information about the first twin, which is that this was a viable entity. And for whatever reason, this baby died. We don't know what it is, but it was a viable entity. Right. He's going to be chayav in a korban zirut now because of the second child, for sure. Question is, the first child, the only question is now, yes, he is a nazir because of the second child. The first child, does the second child give us information about the first child that says that he really might have even been a nazir from the first child? And again, because the second child, the identical twin, survived and was viable, that shows us that the first child was also of the same status. Or if you say that it's Hipila Ishto, and it really means miscarried, but he was reached full gestation, the fact that the other twin was born now shows you that he did reach full gestation. He could have been a viable entity. And again, some exogenous variable caused him to die over here. And so he should be deemed a Ben Kayama and Chayav and Nizirut. So that's the only question here. Does the second child give us more information now that Rabbi Huda might change his mind about the safek of the first child? Now again, you can answer no. Maybe it doesn't. Either they're not identical twins, or like the Rosh says, maybe the children developed at different paces by which one had full gestation at 7 months, one had full gestation at 9 months. So the second one does not give us enough information or more information about the first one. We're still stuck in the same safek. And that's what the Gemara leaves as a teku. According to the Foration, the Rambam, it's a different type of question, which is that here she had a totally different pregnancy, had another child. And now the only question is that now that you're going to utilize the Korban by the second Nizirut, then you're being Mekdishit by the first Nizirut. Did that have any, by the first birth of the first child, even though it wasn't a viable entity, does that have any meaning? Because in the end, you will utilize it for the purpose that you thought. Even though when you were Makdishit, it didn't have any meaning because you were not Chayav at that point in time. So that's the question according to them. Ben Rechumi me Abaye. Ben Rechumi asks Abaye, Areini Nazir, Kishalehei li Ben. He says, I want to be a Nazir when I have a child. Vishama Chavero, his friend here, is Ramar Ba'alai. Me too, on me too. Mahu adibure mashma o agufe mashma. What is he saying at that point in time? Is he saying adibure, that whatever he said, I am going to affirm? And that means that when his wife has a child, I'm also going to become a nazir, meaning Mr. A, when he has a child, I'm going to be a nazir. Oh, a gufe mashma. When he says a lie, he means me too, but me too in the sense that when I have a child, when my wife has a child, then I'll be a nazir. Imtim salomar. Remember that the Rambam, Lashitato, when the Gemara goes imtim salomar, that's the Gemara's conclusion. A gufe mashma. That when he uses the lashon of a lie, that references himself for sure. Amar, Arei Nazir, the Kesheli Ben, the Shema Chaveru Amar Va'ani. Instead of using a lie, he uses the word Va'ani. Mahu. In that case, what's the din? Anafshei Ka'amar. Is he talking about himself? Or, Dilma Achi Kamar, Rechim Nalach Kabatech. I want to share that feeling or that exuberance with you. So here, most of them in Farshim explain that the difference between the first case and the second case is the use of a lie versus ani. That in the case of a lie, the Gemara sees that as being something where he is definitely focused on himself. A lie means upon me, I am accepting the same thing, meaning that whatever you did, I'm mimicking it, but on reference to me, versus the word va'ani, where the ani can maybe mean more sympathy, or really empathy with this individual, and therefore va'ani could mean either, yes, me too, but that's for myself, or ani could mean, I feel the same way that you feel, and therefore I'm excited for you to have a ben just like you are, and I'll be a nazir if you have a ben as well. That's how most of the Rishonim explain the difference between the first case, alai, and the case of va'ani, that it's the language that makes the difference over here, and that's why the Gemara asks the question. The problem with that is that the Gemara changes its lashon. If you notice here, in the first case, it calls it diburei and gufei. And then in the second case, it calls it nafshei instead of gufei. Why does it change? The Mefaresh over here says that it changes the language because that language is not relevant in the first case because you can't say anafshei and rechimna kabateich when you use the word alai. Vani has a much more personal touch to it, and might include that. And that's why the Gemara uses a different lashon for the second question than the first question, even though the question is identical, which is it about you or is it about him? Even though it uses a different language, but he says that is a nature or derivative of the alai and the ani. Because he says over here, halo efshar zalav lishna mitartztahi, dilma v'alai lo hovo kamotcha. Because you can't say alai means, oh, I am as captured in emotion like you are. I love you, like you love yourself. That doesn't work with va'alai. It only works with the word va'ani. So that's why they differentiate. On the other hand, there is an alternate explanation over here, which is the first question is different than the second question, which is that the first question, when the person says va'alai, what does he mean? Does he mean a dibure mashma or a gufe mashma? Is he saying that the individual made a statement, and now what he's trying to do is mimic that statement? The first guy said, I'm a nazir when I have a child. And when you say valai, you mean that I also want to be a nazir when I have a child. Or does valai mean I want to be a nazir? Just like you're a nazir, but you have a stipulation in there when it's a child, valai, I just want the nazirut that you accepted. I'm going to accept the nazirut without any conditions. And that's the first question. The first question is, valai, does that mean that you incorporate the entire language that he said, or are you simply incorporating the acceptance of the nizirut? And then the Gemara says, imtim salomar gufei mashma. Then the Gemara goes ahead and says, listen, he's going on the entirety of what he said. Then, hareni nazir sheli ben, b'shamah chavir v'amar ani. Now the Gemara asks the other question. Once we've established it's the entire language that he is incorporating, now you have a secondary question is, when you say that, do you mean to mimic his language for yourself? Or do you mean to say that you will also be a nazir when he has a child? So in that case, the duplication of the question is not because the language changed from alai to ani, but simply the question about, the first is, when you affirmed what he said, or when you accepted what he said, did you accept the entirety of his stipulation, means nazir with a tanai? Or do you simply accept a Nizirut, period? Then once we establish that you accepted the entirety of his language, then what does that mean? What are the ramifications of that? Does that mean you want to be like him, mean for yourself? When you have a child, you'll be a Nazir? Or does it mean that you want to be a Nazir when he has a child? And that's the second question. So according to that shita, Ani and Alai are interchangeable. The two stages of the question are, how much do you capture? And then once we know how much you capture, what's the meaning of that? Does it mean for you, or does it mean for him? So now the Gemara goes, Vim Tim Salomar, Ko Be'anpe Kasifa Le Milta. That as long as you're in front of the individual themselves, you're too embarrassed to worry about yourself. Here, this individual, and it's likely that this individual hasn't had children or hasn't had a male child, and therefore he's taking this nizirut because, in a sense, quote unquote, he's desperate. He really wants this. It's something that's very meaningful to him. So if you go in front of him and say, yeah, me too, I'm a nazir if I have a child, that's almost ignores the emotional state in which this individual is. And you'd be too embarrassed to talk about yourself or speak about yourself in front of this individual, and therefore anything you do in front of that individual, you would be assuming the nazirut based on whatever his stipulation was, which is, when he has a child, you'll also be a nazir. Because nobody would say, or would focus on the me, when this other person is in this emotional state and declaring himself a nazir if he has a son. The only thing you would be doing is joining him, sympathizing with his predicament, and therefore, you would be accepting this root when he has a child. That's clear. So then, if that's the case, Amar Arini Nazir, L'Kshiel Ploni Ben. So now, what happens is, the person about which the trigger is noted is not in front of us. The person says, I'm going to be a Nazir when so-and-so has a child. So-and-so, maybe if they haven't had children yet. Even though, again, it's something significant, he's trying to be sympathetic to their predicament, their plight, and saying, listen, I want to be a Nazir when they have a child, then, b'shamach ha'verov amar ani, in that case, when he says, ani, mahu, what do we say? Mi amrina enshalo b'fanav, anav sheik amar. Since the person about which the nether is really considering, which is this person who's going to have a child, is not present here, then the person is not embarrassed to focus on himself in that case and say, listen, you know what, I'll be a Nazir when I have a child too, because there's no affront to the individual who, quote-unquote, they're praying for or they are rooting for in order to have a ben. So therefore, he's not embarrassed to talk about himself. Just like it means so much to you that you're taking the zirut for this guy, you have so much sympathy for him that you want to take the zirut. Me too. I have those same emotions towards him and I also want to accept the zirut. Here, the Gemara says, tibayi. Again, we've seen this many times in Nazir and Nidarim. Tibai means teku in the Lashon Nidarim and Lashon Nazir, which is, the Gemara leaves that as unresolved at this case. So the Gemara went through two stages where it went intim salomar, and the basic conclusion there is that a person, when they are in the presence of the other individual who's in this emotional state, they are sympathetic, and their sympathy leads them to enact the Nizirut the exact same way that the other individual did, which means to join them and the trigger to be the same. Our only question that was left was in a situation where the person accepting the nizirut is separated from the emotional cause or the emotional trigger. And therefore, you're not in front of the person who you are being sympathetic towards. And therefore, maybe over there, you have the ability to take for yourself. Or do we still say no, that even in that case, the corroboration of the second guy saying that I want to be like you is in the same manner or form of sympathy, and therefore he's mimicking and saying that I want the same trigger. And that the Gemara left as a teku. All right. Hareini Nazir. V'Nazir Kishili Ben. The person says, I am a Nazir. And the assumption is that you're a Nazir immediately. He's accepting. But I am also a Nazir when I have a child. Hitchil Moned Shalo. He begins to count his Nazirut, which he accepted immediately. V'chakach Nolado Ben. And a child is born in the midst of his counting his nizirut. All of these are stam nizirut, which is 30 days. Mashlim et shelo. He finishes up his 30 days. V'achakach mone et shel binu. And then he counts his child's nizirut. The way that most of the Rishonim explain this is that he finishes his nizirut because in his acceptance of the nizirut, his nizirut was stipulated first, which is already nazir. So it takes priority both because of the fact that he articulated it first, but also because he already started his nezirut. Therefore, he completes his 30 days, and then he starts to count the 30 days of his child. Again, according to most of the Rishonim here, that means that after the first 30 days, he shaves his head, he brings his korbanot, he finishes up his nezirut, and then he starts a second nezirut that is associated with his son. Now then, there are Rishonim, like the Mifarish over here, that say that basically he finishes up his 30 days, and then he begins to count the 30 days of his son, without any korban, without any tiglachat in the middle, and then he does a single tiglachat and brings single korbanot on the entirety of that nezirut of those 60 days. Because the obligation to be a nazir for his son came in the middle of his current nezirut, and therefore it possibly interrupts his nezirut. They then join together to become a single nezirut. The way that the Mefarash says it is, Kevan dechalalav shel bno, ad shelo yishlim nezirut shelo, naseh kenezirut achat, lakach en yochol agelech. They become a single unit, a single entity of nezirut. Because the trigger causes it to happen simultaneously, or that the nezirut overlap, that's why it happens that way. Now, if that is the case, you can ask a question. I will answer it later when we get to the next case. What does it matter then? I mean, that in the end, if you're telling me that he has to just keep 60 days, why does it matter if we're counting the 30 of his or the 30 of his son? In the end, he has to finish up 60. So why does it matter whether the first 30 are his, the second 30 are his son's, or if you say he takes 10, then he has 30 of his son, and then he has 20 of his own to finish? Why does it make a difference how or whose counting goes first if you believe that it is a single nezirut over here? All right, so then the next case is, Hareini nazir ke shieli ben. He first stipulates that I'll be a nazir when my child is born. V'nazir, and I myself will also be a nazir. Hitchil moned shelo, he begins to count his nezirut. V'kakach nolado ben. And then his son is born. Meniach et shelo, he leaves his nezirut. Umoneh et shel beno. And then he counts his son's nezirut. V'kakach mashlim et shelo. And then he finishes off his nezirut. So there we have three different views about what happened over here. First of all, we know that he started his nezirut. Even though he accepted his nezirut second, his child is yet to be born. So therefore, he starts to count his own nezirut. Now, if we assume the Mishnah is talking about stam nezirut, that means that we're talking about 30 days. And that means that the child is born somewhere within his nezirut. So that means that you're splitting his nezirut, whether it's 20 before, 10 afterwards, or 10 before, 20 afterwards. That's the way that you're splitting the nezirut. Now, in this case, as the Rosh, the Tosafot point out, you can't just say that he'll be Megaleach when he finishes his son's nezirut, because if he does that, you do not have sufficient time afterwards for the second nezirut to allow you for a second tiglachat. Because we know that the minimum time for tiglachat, or for one to cut their hair, is 30 days. So now in this case, where if the son interrupts his nezirut, and they count 30 days for the son, and then he goes back to his nezirut, if he was to do a tiglachat and bring korbanot, what he has left over now is 10 days, 20 days, whatever the leftover is, it's less than 30 days. And then less than 30 days, he will not be able to do a second tiglachat at the end. And therefore, it would not be enough time to allow him to create two nezirut over here. Therefore, according to the Rishonim, this now conflates the nezirut and it becomes one big nezirut. It's a 60-day nezirut, but, and again, you have to ask the question here, why does it matter whether he's counting his, then his son's, and then he finishes up his? In the end, he has to do the 60 days. The question, or the machlok between them, is what happens at the end of the 60 days? The way that the Bali HaTosafot, the Rosh, bring down over here, at the end of the 60 days, he does a tiglachat, one cutting his hair, and brings two sets of korbanot, because he completed at that time two separate nezirot, his plus his swan for his son's birth, and therefore he cuts his hair and brings two sets of korbanot. Other Rishonim say every korban requires a tiglachat. You can't have one tiglachat that results in two sets of korbanot. And therefore they believe that at the end of the 60 days you do a tiglachat, but then you only bring one set of korbanot. And that's it. One set of korbanot and nothing more. So again, in the first case, the majority of the Rishonim believe that he finishes up his, then does his son's, and he does a tiglachat in between, and brings korbanot, and then another tiglachat does korbanot. In the second case, they get joined together, they get fused together, and he does a single 60 days. Again, it's still deemed that he started, he stopped, finishes his sons, and then does his. The end of the 60 days, now we have a machloket as to whether when he does the glach at the end, does he bring two sets of korbanot or only one set of korbanot. The mifaresh, who already in the first case says that the cases are fused together, you bring only a single korban, what's the difference between the first case and the second case? In both cases, you're fusing the nizriot together, and then you bring a korban at the end. So here, the mifaresh brings in the guyon, it's a second pshat here, that says that it's clear here that his nizirut was for 50 days. Why is that clear? Because he needs sufficient time afterwards, where he has a full 30 days after the nizirut of his son. So what happens here is he begins the count, and then he's interrupted by his son. So then the first days count towards his nizirut, but he then has, after he finishes his son's nizirut, he shaves, brings his korbanot, and then he will continue counting his nizirut, but now there's sufficient time for him to grow his hair back. Because when you have a nizirut that's greater than 30 days, say for instance, only did 20 days before, had the son, did the 30 days of the son, there's still 30 days remaining in his nizirut. That 30 days that remains afterwards is sufficient time to have him grow his hair back, and then allow him to do a tiglachat min korbanot on his own nizirut. And you could subdivide his nizirut between 20 days before and 30 days afterwards, even though it was interrupted with a nizirut in the middle. Again, this will make more sense when we get to the next Mishnah, which the next Mishnah will bring an example or a case like that, where you split up the nizirut. As long as you have sufficient time in the back end of the nizirut that got interrupted to get a full 30 days in, then that's fine. And you don't have to restart the count. You just continue on with your count, and the days before are deemed to be included. So that's the way the Mifaresh deals with this second case here. He says this is not a stam nizirut, it's a case of 50 days. In order to get there, be a nizirut to 30 days afterwards, and then you bring two korbanot according to the Mifaresh. All right, now the question that I asked, both in the Reisha according to the Mifaresh and in the Sefer according to most of the Rishonim, is once you've joined or fused the nizirut together, why does it matter which belongs to which? You have to get 60 days in anyway. Why does it matter that the first 10 are your nizirut, the next 30 are your sons, and the next 20 are yours? Why does that matter? So here, the Rosh brings down, and the Balei Tosfot note, that later on in the Gemara, it will be a nafkamina for if there's a interruption in the nizirut. For instance, you become Tameh in the middle of the nizirut. Which nizirut did you undermine? So in the case where, let's say, he became Tameh after he completed 20 of his, 30 of his sons, and now he's in the last 10 of his, he becomes Tameh. That will only undermine his nizirut, not the son's nizirut, because the son's nizirut has been finished already. 30 days are done. Or the other way around. If he became Tameh during his son's nizirut, that would ruin the 30 days of his son, but not ruin his first 20 days, and he only have to do 10 days afterwards for himself. So it will have a nafkamina, according to a daya that we'll see in the Gemara, that when you have Tuma or Nitma in the middle, that it only undermines the nizirut that you're in, that it matters which nizirut you're counting at which time, because then the Tuma will affect only that nizirut, and not the other nizirut. Say, for instance, he finished 20 days of his, now he's in the middle of his child's nizirut, and he becomes Tameh. So you could have suggested that undermines his and his child's, and now he has to start two new 60-day nizirut. But he says, no, his 20 days still count, his child's nizirut, now he has to do another 30 days for his child to start over, but once he finishes those 30 days for his child, he only have 10 days of his own to finish, because the 20 days were not undermined. So that's why there'll be a nafkamina as to whose nizirut you're counting when you become Tameh in the middle. So nafkamina to the Rosh is, Pavas lesa drich lashim yotero bet nizirut kudeg dul seyar. And then, v'o nafkamina l'rab, damar nitna b'shel b'no, inu soter shalom. So according to Rav in the Gemara, where the Tuma only undermines the nizirut that you're in, there's a nafkamina which one you're counting. Whereas the Rosh over here brings a second nafkamina, and this colors somewhat a better picture here. If the guy does 20 days before, then his son's 30 days, and then he has only 10 days left. What the Rosh suggests over here is, since you only have 10 days left afterwards, what you need to do is, b'nafkamina lashlim yotero bet nizirut kadei gedul seyar. Maybe you should have to keep now 10 days, plus another 20 days, and finish up your nizirut, because you need a minimum of 30 days afterwards. And so what the Rosh is suggesting is a case where you did 20 days before, and your son's nizirut you accepted first, and then your son is born, you have to do 30 days for your son. Now you have 10 days left afterwards in order to finish yours up. How much more time do you have to wait? Do you have to wait an additional 20 days to get to the 30-day minimum of Gidul Se'ar? So what the Rosh is suggesting is you shave your head, you bring your korbanot after your son's done, and then you enter your, finish up your 10 days of Nizirut. Those 10 days aren't sufficient for Gidul Se'ar. So you have to do another 20 days. So it'll make a difference as to who's you're counting, because you have to be add on days at the end. So if the first days belong to you, then how many you have to add on in the end will depend on how many your deficit is, what your deficit is to the 30 days in the end. Again, like if you have the case of the Mifaresh, which is a 50-day Nizirut, then you won't have to add on any extra in the end, because you'll 20 before, 30 afterwards, you're totally fine. You won't have to add anything. If you have less than 30 afterwards, whatever your deficit is will mean that you are now keeping a Nizirut that is 60 plus enough days to get you to 30 after the interruption. So that's what the Rosh says is another nafkamina, which is interesting. That means that the Rosh believes even in that second case, you would shave after the son's Nizirut, bring korbanot, and then do your Nizirut. Ah, your Nizirut's finished after 10 days, but you still need Gidul Se'ar. So we're going to hold you out for another 20 days of Gidul Se'ar and extend your Nizirut now, where your Nizirut now will actually become, instead of being 30 days, it will now actually be 50 days. Not by your choice, but by necessity for you to grow out your hair. And 80 days total instead of 30 and 30 because of the interruptions. And where the interruption happens will actually determine how much extra time in the end that you're going to have to add on. So for instance, in a case where you only got 10 days in the beginning, and you have 20 afterwards, then you only need to add on 10 days. That means you only end up with 70 total. Versus if you had 20 before and then 10 afterwards, you have to do another 20 days afterwards, then you end up with a total of 80 days as a Nazir. So that nafkamina will make a difference as to who's you're counting when. Because how much you count before will deem how much you need to count afterwards, but you still need to reach the minimum of 30 afterwards. So how much over the existing need for Nizirut will be determined by how much you counted before versus how much you count afterwards. And the Rosh goes as far as to say that during that period of time, those extra days that he's making up for Gidul Se'ar, if he became Tamei during that period, according to Rav, whose Shita we'll see later in the Gemara, that would not be Soter his entire Nizirut, since that extension is only for Gidul Se'ar, but not an equal part of his Nizirut. Bayirova, Amar Eini Nazir, Lachar Esrim Yom. He says, I'm going to be a Nazir after 20 days. Ome Achshav, Me'ayom. But from now, from today, 100-day Nizirut. So he, first of all, stipulates, I'm going to be a Nazir in 20 days. But then he puts in a Nizirut that says, from now, Me'achshav, I want to be a Nazir for 100 days. What's the din? Kevin Dalein Me'ya Besrim Lo Shalmin. Since he knows that the 100 are not going to be finished within those 20 days, Lo Chaylin. It's not Chal now, and it's postponed till after he completes the first Nizirut. Since he accepted first Nizirut that will start in 20 days, and the 100-day Nizirut cannot fit into those 20 days, what he essentially is saying is, after 20 days I'm accepting a restam Nizirut of 30 days, and then after that, I am accepting a 100-day Nizirut. Tosfot says, even if he says Me'akshav, which makes it sound like he wants it to be Chal right now, we'll still say it's Chal afterwards, and we'll interpret as Me'akshav to mean that I want the obligation to start now. I'm accepting it now, even though it only take effect later on. So the Me'akshav is not that I want it to go into effect now, it means that I want the obligation, my commitment is from now. And reinterpret the word Me'akshav not to mean that it starts right away, but rather the commitment is done now. Odilma. Or maybe because he has enough hair growth in the back end, it's okay. So what he'll do is, he'll keep 20 days of the 100-day Nizirut, stop, do his 30-day Nizirut, do a Tiklacha, bring his korbanot for that 30-day Nizirut, and then finish the 80 afterwards. Because the 80 that's afterwards is enough to be a standalone Nizirut by itself. So he'll add together the 20 before and the 80 afterwards, and that'll be some good Nizirut. He'll be able to interrupt his Nizirut in that way.
The Rosh does bring an alternate view by which he would actually start the 20 days, do the Nizirut Stam at that point, the one that he had said would start after 20 days, and then he would subsequently finish up the 80 days of the first Nizirut, then to do a Tiglachan, and at that point in time, bring both sets of Korbanot, the Korban for the 100 days, as well as the Korban for the Stam Nizirut that started after 20 days. So he doesn't do any Tiglachan in the middle, but simply waits until the end in order to do a teglachat that would cover both of the Naziriyot and bring two sets of korbanot on that one teglachat, as opposed to what the Rosh brings in another interpretation, what the Balei HaTosafot say, which is that in the interrupted Nazirut, he does a teglachat after the one that started 20 days in, after 30 days, he does a teglachat, brings his korbanot, then finishes up the 80 of the 100, and then does another teglachat and brings korbanot for the 100-day Nazirut.
Why does he only ask in this case whether there's sufficient time afterwards for Gidul Seyar? And over there he's saying, okay, listen, if I took a Nazirut that'll go into effect in 20 days, and then I take 100-day Nazirut, then my question is, can you split it up? You can ask the same question with two 30-day Nazirut. Stam Nazirut. He says, I want my Stam Nazirut to take effect in 20 days, plus Hareini Nazir Me'akshav. I'm going to Nazir right away. So now, that's a 30-day Nazirut that doesn't fit into the 20 days. Do we say then that he waits till after his Nazirut in 20 days, and then only then begins the 30-day Nazirut, the second one? Or do we say, no, he starts the 20 days now, and then he does 10 days afterwards?
Tosafot says over here that the question is, why don't we fuse the two together when we're talking about a Nazir Mu'etet, which is that he'll count 20 days before, then interrupt with his 30-day Nazirut, and then finish the last 10 days afterwards, and then bring one Teglachat for both of those durations. And that actually leads Tosafot later on to ask a question with regards to what happens if the order of his Nazirut, or Neder Nazirut, is this, which is, what happens if he says, Arini Nazir Me Yom, the Nazir Lachar Etzrim Yom. He first accepts the 100 days, and then says, I'm a Nazir after 20 days. The Hashta Hikti Me Yom. Here he put the 100 days first. Imar Tchali Me Hashta Ilo. Do we say it takes effect immediately or not? V'shema Duadin the Matzili Bayochi, V'chadim Minayav Nakot. Tosafot says, he's not sure. Maybe you could have asked that question as well. And the Gemara just asked one of the two questions, and maybe the question is similar no matter what the order is. Or maybe the order does matter, that only once he accepted the 20-day delayed Nazirut, does that then affect the 100-day Nazirut, which was taken afterwards. But if the 100-day Nazirut was put in place, he has no right then to superimpose on that a Nazirut that would start in 20 days. And therefore, the Gemara doesn't ask the question, because it's not a relevant question. He can't put a Nazirut on top of another Nazirut. So Gemara says, Chadami go chadakami baile. It's an embedded or nested question, which is, Intim salomar Nizirut mu'etet, kevan da asara yomim o didyatrin, that he only has 10 days left over afterwards, lo salik le, halein asara, those 10 don't suffice, because 10 days isn't sufficient to be anything, and therefore for sure his Nizirut is postponed to afterwards. So therefore, vadai, nazir me yom, kevan di le tamnin yom in vesof, salkin le olo. Does that work or not? So since he has 100 days, and the piece afterwards is sufficient to be a Nazirut by itself, maybe in that case, it would be okay. So what he says is, first question is, you're right. If you have two 30-day Nazirut, can I split it up into 20 days before or 10 days afterwards? Now, if you tell me no way, because 10 days afterwards is meaningless, if you already shaved your head in the interim for the Mirwa, 10 days on me, I'm going to ask you another question. What happens if the Nazirut that I took up front, the one that I said second, which was 100 days, where there's 20 before and 80 afterwards, maybe in that case it will work because I have sufficient time to duration to grow my hair back. Therefore, I have a Nazirut in the back end as well. So that's the nested question that he's asking. Then the Gemara will continue. I'm going to stop here with the four lines down. That v'imtim solomar, the Gemara continues to ask questions on this to test this case of what does it mean before, afterwards, how much you have to have before and after. Your question, which all the Rishonim asked over here is, why don't we just answer the question from our Mishnah? Our Mishnah is exactly that case. Our Mishnah is the case where he takes on a Nizirut. When my son is born, and then by definition, since he's dealing with two 30-day Nizirut, that means that his son's Nizirut interrupts in the middle, and whatever he has afterwards is less than 30 days. That's exactly the question that's being asked here. Why doesn't the Gemara bring the Mishnah as a proof? So both the Tosfot and the Mefaresh, everybody says over here that the cases are different. Because that the case, Ukushieli Ben, that is a time frame which is not exact, which is that he has no idea when his son is going to be born. Since he has no idea when his son is going to be born, when he says, my son's born, I'm going to be a Nazir, when he takes on a Nazirut now, there's two possibilities. One possibility is that he could finish. He could finish his whole Nazirut before his son is born. Number two is, it's not an exact amount of time. So we're not even certain that where his nizirut would have been cut off, that he shouldn't start his nizirut. Because we don't know when that's going to happen. On the other hand, the cases here are cases where he defines the time where the second nizirut, the first nizirut is going to start, is after 20 days. So since there he defined the time, and it's clear that his nizirut won't fit into those 20 days, maybe there it's different. Because it's impossible for him to finish his nizirut, and he knows exactly when the first nizirut is going to take effect. As opposed to our Mishnah, where he has no idea where the first nizirut is going to take effect, because it's taloi in something that's not fixed in time. And secondly, he has the possibility where he could finish his nizirut. For that reason, the Gemara does not bring the Mishnah as a proof or an answer to the question, because the cases are completely different. Okay, we're going to stop here.